yet. They blurred together, one long stream of frenzy and panic and wings across the sky. It had been morning when Luce fell asleep. They stopped in front of the Kayum Malak. Luce stood on the arrowhead slab, facing the two angels in the sculpture. Roland and Cam soared into the sky and hovered about 50 feet in the air. They gazed across the horizon, dipped close together to speak quietly. Their enormous wings blocked the sun, which Luce noticed sat troublingly low on the horizon. It is now the evening of the sixth day since Lucifer began his solitary fall, Dee said softly. We slept all day? Luce asked, horrified. We wasted so much time. Nothing was wasted, Dee said. I have a very big night tonight. Come to think of it, you do too. You'll soon be glad you had your rest.
Let's get it on before another shift hits, before we have to fight off any scale, Cam said,
as he and Roland touched down on the ground again. Their wings jostled lightly from the force of their landings.
Cam is right. We don't have any time to waste.
Daniel produced the black satchel, which contained the halo Luce had stolen from the sunken church in Venice. Then he slung over the duffel bag, which bulged at the center, where he'd zipped the round cup of the silver pennon. He placed both bags, unzipped, before Dee, so that all three artifacts sat in a row. Dee didn't move.
Dee? Daniel asked. What do we have to do?
Dee didn't answer. Roland stepped forward, touching her back.
Cam and I saw signs of more scale on the horizon. They don't know our location yet, but they aren't far away. It would be best if we hurried.
Dee frowned. I'm afraid that is impossible. But you said... Luce broke off as Dee stared at her placidly. The tattoo, the symbol on the ground. I would be happy to explain, Dee said. But there will be no hurrying the deed itself. She glanced around the circle of angels, outcasts, and Luce. When she was sure she had all their attention, she began. As we know, the early history of the Fallen was never written down. Although you may not remember very clearly, her gaze swept over the angels. You recorded your first days on Earth in things. To this day, the essential elements of your prehistoric lore are encoded in the fabric of different artifacts. Artifacts that are, to the naked eye, something else altogether. Dee reached for the halo and held it up to the sunlight. You see, she ran her finger along a series of cracks in the glass that Luce hadn't noticed before. This glass halo is also a lens. She held it up for them to look through. Behind it, her face was slightly distorted by the convex curve of the glass, making her golden eyes look huge. She put the halo down, moved to the duffel bag, and removed the silver pennon. It shone in the day's last rays of sunlight as she ran her hand softly across its interior. And this goblet, she pointed to the illustration hammered into the silver, the wings Luce had noticed in Jerusalem, bears a record of the exodus from the fall site, the first diaspora of angels. To return to your first home on Earth, you first must fill this goblet. She paused, staring deeply inside the silver pennon. When it is filled, we will empty it on the slab's intricate tiled floor, which contains imagery of how the world once was. When the goblet is filled, Luce repeated. Filled with what? First things first. Dee walked to the edge of the stone platform and brushed away a bit of grit. Then she bowed to place the goblet directly on top of the yellow symbol in the stone. I believe this goes here. Luce stood rapt beside Daniel as they watched Dee pace slowly up and down the platform. Finally, she picked up the halo again and carried it to the Kayum Malak. At some point, she had changed out of her hiking boots back into her stilettos, and her heels clicked on the marble. Her unkempt hair swished down to her waist. She took a deep, luxurious breath and let it out. With both hands, she raised the halo over her head, whispered a few words of prayer, and then, very carefully, lowered the halo directly into the circle of air, carved out by the sculpture of the praying angels touching wings. It fit like a ring on a finger. "I did not see that coming," Arion muttered to Luce. Neither had Luce, although she was certain that the woman was engaged in something powerfully sacred. When she spun around to face Luce and the angels, Dee looked as if she were going to say something. Instead, she sank to her knees and lay down on her back at the foot of the Kayom Malak. Daniel lurched toward her, ready to help, but she waved him away. The toes of her shoes rested on the base of the Kayom Malak. Her slender arms stretched over her head so that her fingertips grazed the silver pennon. Her body spanned the distance precisely. She closed her eyes and lay still for several minutes. Just when Luce was beginning to wonder whether Dee had fallen asleep, Dee said, "It's a good thing I stopped growing 2,000 years ago. She stood up then, taking a hand from Roland, and dusted herself off. "Everything is in order. When the moon hits right about there." She pointed toward the eastern sky, just above where the rocks tapered off.
"The moon?"
Cam gave Daniel a glance. "Yes, the moon. It needs to shine through precisely here." Dee tapped the center of the halo's glass, where a jagged crack became more visible than it had been minutes earlier. "If I know the moon, which I do, after all these years, one does develop an intimate relationship with one's companions. It should fall precisely where we need it to, at the stroke of midnight, tonight. Fitting, really, since midnight is my favorite time of day. The witching hour." "What happens then?" Luce asked. "At midnight, when the moon is where it needs to be." Dee slowed her pace and cupped her hand against Luce's cheek. "Everything, dear."
"And what do we do in the meantime?" Daniel asked.
Dee reached into her cardigan pocket and revealed a large gold pocket watch. "A few things remain to be done." They followed Dee's instructions down to the smallest detail. Each of the artifacts was swept, polished, dusted by several pairs of hands. It was well into the night before Luce was able to visualize what Dee had in mind for the ceremony. "Two more lanterns, please," Dee instructed. "That will make three, one for each of the relics." It was strange the way Dee referred to the relics, as if she were not one of them. Even stranger was the way she buzzed around the enclosed plateau, like a hostess preparing for a dinner party, making sure everything was just right. The quartet of outcasts lit the lanterns ritualistically, their shaven heads orbiting the expanse of rock like planets. The first light illuminated the Kayom Malak. The second lantern shone on the silver pennon, which still sat where Dee had placed it, atop the golden arrow on the slab, at a distance of Dee's height exactly, a scant 5 feet, from the Kayom Malak. Earlier, the angels had arranged a half-moon arc of flat-topped boulders, like benches, on the left and right sides of the slab, so that it resembled a stage. This made the space look even more like an amphitheater, as Annabelle dusted the boulders like an usher, preparing seats for an imminent audience. "What will Dee do with all this?" Luce whispered to Daniel. Daniel's violet eyes were heavy, with something he couldn't voice, and before Luce could beg him to try, Dee's hands found their way to Luce's shoulders. "Please don these robes. I find that ceremonial costumes help to maintain focus on the task at hand. Daniel, I think this should fit you." She pressed a heavy brown cloak into his arms. And here's one for graceful Arion. She passed it to the angel. That leaves you, Luce. There are smaller robes at the bottom of my chest over there. Take my lantern and help yourself. Luce took the lantern and started to lead Daniel toward the cave where they'd slept the night before, but Dee gripped Daniel's arm. A word? Daniel nodded for Luce to go on alone, so she did, wondering what Dee didn't want to say in front of her. She slipped the lantern's handle over her forearm, its light swinging as she walked toward the mouth of the cave. She eased open the stiff lid of the chest and reached inside. A long brown robe was the only thing in it. She picked it up. It was made of heavy wool, thick as a peacoat, and musty like tobacco. When Luce held it up against her body, it looked about 3 feet too long. Now she was even more curious about why Dee had sent her away. She set the lantern on the ground and clumsily pulled the robe over her head.
Need some help?
Cam had entered the cave as quietly as a cloud. Standing behind her, he gathered a fold of the cloak's material and cinched it under the garment's woven belt. He knotted it in place so that the hem ended at Luce's ankles perfectly, as if the cloak had been made for her. She turned around to face him. Lantern light flickered on his face. He stood very still, in the way that only Cam could. Luce slid her thumb along the belt he'd knotted. Thanks, she said, moving back toward the entrance of the cave.
Luce, wait.
She stopped. Cam looked down at the toe of his boot, kicking the edge of the chest. Luce stared at it, too. She was wondering how she hadn't heard him come into the cave, how they'd ended up alone.
You still don't believe I'm on your side.
It doesn't matter now, Cam. Her throat felt impossibly tight.
Listen.
Cam took a step toward her, so that there were only inches between them. She thought he was going to grab her, but he didn't. He didn't even try to touch her. He just stayed very still and close.
Things used to be different. Look at me.
She did, nervously.
I may wear Lucifer's gold on my wings now, but it wasn't always like that. You knew me before I went that way, Lucinda, and you and I were friends.
Well, like you said, things change. Cam let out a frustrated groan.
It is impossible to apologize to a girl with such a conveniently selective memory. Allow me to venture a guess. As you awaken to your true self, you are unpacking all sorts of sumptuous memories in which you and Daniel fall in love. And Daniel says this beautiful phrase, and Daniel turns and broods towards silken silhouettes, caressing the tender tips of stars on the horizon.
Why shouldn't I? We belong to each other. Daniel is my everything, and you are...
What does he say about me?
Cam's eyes narrowed. Luce cracked her knuckles and thought about the way, early on at Sword and Cross, Daniel's hand had swept over hers to stop the mindless habit. His touch had been familiar from the beginning. He says he trusts you. A pause followed that Luce refused to fill. She wanted to leave. What if Daniel looked over and saw her in this dim cave with Cam? They were arguing, but Daniel wouldn't be able to tell that from a distance. What did they look like, she and Cam? When she looked up, his eyes were clear, green, and profoundly sad.
Do you trust me? He asked.
Why does this matter right now? His eyes shot open, wild and excited.
Everything matters right now. This is the showtime for which all other shows have been warm-ups. And in order for you to do what you need to do, you can't see me as the enemy. You have no idea what you've gotten into.
What are you talking about? Luce! It was Dee's voice. She and Daniel were standing at the mouth of the cave. Dee was the only one smiling. We are ready for you. Me? You. Luce was suddenly frightened. What do I have to do? Why don't you come and see? Dee's hand was extended, but Luz found it difficult to move. She glanced at Cam, but he was looking at Daniel. Daniel was still looking at her, his eyes burning the hungry way they did when he was about to sweep her into his arms and kiss her deeply. But he didn't move, and that turned the 10 feet of space between them into 2,000 miles. "Have I done something wrong?" she asked. "You were about to do something wonderful," Dee said, still holding out her hand. "Let us not waste time we do not have." Luz took her hand, and it felt so cold that it scared her. She studied Dee, who looked paler, more fragile, older than she had at the library in Vienna. But somehow, underneath her withered skin and prominent bones, something still shone bright and effervescent from within her. "Do I look all right, dear? You're staring." "Of course," Luz said. "It's just... my soul. It's glowing, isn't it?" Luz nodded. "Good." Cam and Daniel did not speak as they brushed past each other, Cam striding into the suddenly windy wilderness outside, Daniel circling behind Luz to carry the lantern. "Dee?" Luz turned to the woman, whose freezing hand she was trying to warm with her own. "I don't want to go out there. I'm afraid, and I don't know why." "That is as it should be, but this cup cannot pass you." "Can someone please tell me what is going on?" "Yes," Dee said, giving Luce's hand a firm but supportive forward tug. "Just as soon as we are outside." As they rounded the arrowhead-shaped boulder that partly shielded the entrance to the small cave, the cold wind bore into them unforgivingly. Luz staggered back, shielding her face from the sudden spray of sand with her free hand. Dee and Daniel made her press on, past the head of the trail they'd climbed the night before, where they were most exposed to the wind. Luz found that the peaks around the rest of the mesa formed barriers to the swirling, gritty gusts, allowing her to hear and see again. Though she could hear the daily dust storm howl beyond the plateau, everything within its curved rock walls seemed suddenly too quiet and too clear. Two lanterns glowed on the marble slab, one before the Kayom Malak, one behind the silver pennon. Both lights attracted swirls of gnats that bounced off the small glass panes, strangely calming Luz. At least she was still in a world where light attracted bugs. She was still in a world she knew. The lantern illuminated the two golden angels bowing toward each other in prayer. Its light touched the edges of the heavy, cracked glass halo, which Dee had returned to its rightful place, cradled by the angel's wings. On the cliffs towering over the plateau, four outcasts perched on ledges, each pale warrior watching a different cardinal direction. The outcasts' wings, tucked to their sides, were barely visible, but the edges of Daniel's lantern light revealed the star shots in each of their silver bows, as if they expected the scale's arrival at any moment. The four fallen angels Luz knew best occupied the stone seats around the ceremonially placed relics. Arian and Annabelle sat on one side, back straight, their wings concealed. On the other side sat Cam and Roland, with one empty seat between them. Was it for Luz or Daniel? "Good, everyone's here, except the moon." Dee looked up at the eastern sky. 5 more minutes. "Daniel, will you take a seat?" Daniel handed Dee the lantern and walked across the marble slab. He stood before the Kayom Malak. Luz wanted to go to him, but before she could even lean in his direction, Dee's grip tightened around her hand. "Stay with me, honey." Daniel sat down between Roland and Cam and turned his expressionless gaze to Luz. "Allow me to explain." D Dee's calm, clear voice echoed off the red rock walls, and all the angels straightened in attention. As I told you earlier, we require the moon to make an appearance, and now, in a moment, she will visit us above this peak. She will grin down through the lens of the halo. We are fortunate the sky is clear tonight, with nothing to obscure the shadows of her lovely craters as they join with the cracks in the halo's glass. Together, these elements will project the outlines of continents and lines of countries, which, in concert with the carvings on the slab, will comprise the map of the simulacrum Terra Prima. Right here. She pointed to an empty space on the marble step, where she'd lain earlier, measuring the distance between the Kayom Malak and the silver pennon. You will see a representation of the way the world was when you angels fell to earth. Yes, she inhaled. Just another moment. There. The crown of the moon rose above the rocky crag that jutted out behind the Kayom Malak. And even though the moon was pale white and waning, at the moment it shone as brilliantly as dawn. The angels, the outcasts, Luce and Dee, stood quietly for several minutes, watching the moon climb, watching it cast a little light, and then a little more through the translucent surface of the halo. The marble slab beyond it was blank, then clouded, then all at once the projection was clear and focused and real. It projected lines, intersections, continents, borders, lands, and seas. It looked half complete. Some lines trailed off into nothing, some boundaries never closed. But it was clearly a map of the Earth, Luce thought, as it would have looked when Daniel fell for her. It stirred something in the deepest recesses of her memory. It looked familiar. "Do you see the yellow stone at the center there?" Dee asked. Luce squinted to see a tile of the same slightly darker yellow stone as the one where the goblet had been placed. "That is us, right here, in the middle of everything." "Like an arrow saying, 'You are here,'" Luce said. "That's right, dear," Dee turned to Luce. "And now, my Lucinda, have you figured out your role in this ceremony yet?" Luce squirmed. What did they want from her? This was their story, not hers. After all this commotion, she was just another girl, swept up in the promise of love. Daniel had found her on Earth after his fall from grace. Someone should ask him what was going on. "I'm sorry. I don't know." "I'll give you a hint," Dee said. "Do you see the spot where angels fell, marked on this map?" Luce sighed, eager to get to the point. "No. It was ordained many millennia ago that this location on this map could only be revealed in blood. The blood that courses through our veins knows far more than we do. Look closely. See the grooves along the marble? They are the lines to close the boundaries of the Angelico-Prelapsarian Earth. They shall become clear once the blood is shed and poured. The blood will pool in one vitally important place. The knowledge, my dear, is in the blood." "The site of the fall," one of the angels said reverently. It was Arian or Annabelle, Luce couldn't tell which. "Somewhat like a treasure map in an adventure story, the impact point, that's the site of the fall, will be marked with a five-pointed star of blood. Now..." Dee was talking, but Luce could no longer hear what she was saying. So this was what it was going to take to stop Lucifer. This was what Cam meant she had to do. This was why Daniel wouldn't look at her. Her throat felt like it was stuffed with cotton. When she opened her mouth, her voice sounded like she was speaking underwater. "You need..." She swallowed in pain. "My blood..." Dee choked on her laugh and pressed a cold hand to Lucy's hot cheek. Good heavens, no, child. You keep yours. I'm going to give you mine. What? That's right. As I am passing out of this world, you will fill the silver pennon with my blood. You will pour it into this depression just east of the golden arrow marker. She indicated a dent at the left of the goblet, then fanned her hands out dramatically toward the map. And watch it follow the grooves here and there and here and there until you find the star. Then you will know where to meet Lucifer and thwart his plan. Luce cracked her knuckles. How could Dee speak about her own death so casually? Why would you do this? Why, it's what I was created for. Angels were made to adore, and I have a purpose, too. Then, from the deep pocket of her brown cloak, Dee withdrew a long silver dagger. But that's the dagger Miss Sophia had used to kill Penn, the one she'd had in Jerusalem when she bound up the fallen angels. Yes, I picked this up in Golgotha, Dee said, admiring the craftsmanship of the blade. It shone as if freshly sharpened. Dark history, this knife. It's time it was put to some good use, dear. She held out the knife, its blade flat on her open palm, its hilt pointing toward Luce. It would mean a lot to me if you would be the one to spill my blood, dear. Not only because you are dear to me, but also because it must be you. Me? Yes, you. You must kill me, Lucinda. 15. The Gift. I can't. You can, Dee said. And you will. No one else can do it. Why? Dee looked over her shoulder in Daniel's direction. He was still seated, looking at Luce, but he didn't seem to see her. None of the angels rose to help her. Dee spoke in a whisper. If you are, as you say you are, fully resolved to break your curse... You know I am. Then you must use my blood to break it. No. How could her curse be bound up in someone else's blood? Dee had brought them up here to the Qayyum Malak to reveal the site of the angel's fall. That was her role as the desideratum. It didn't have anything to do with Luce's curse. Did it? Break the curse. Of course Luce wanted to. It was all she wanted. Could she break it right here, right now? How would she live with herself if she killed Dee? Luce looked to the old woman, who took her by the hands. Don't you want to know the truth of your original life? Of course I do, but why would killing you reveal my past? It will reveal all kinds of things. I don't understand. Oh, dear, Dee sighed, looking past Luce at the others. These angels have done well to keep you safe, but they have also protected you into complacency. The time has come for you to awaken, Lucinda, and to awaken, you must act. Luce turned away. The look in Dee's golden eyes was too pleading, too intense. I've seen enough death. A single angel rose in the darkness from the circle they'd formed around the Qayyum Malak. If she can't do it, she can't do it. Shut up, Cam, Arian said. Sit down. Cam stepped forward, approaching Luce. His narrow frame cast its shadow across the slab. We've taken it this far. You can't say we haven't given it every kind of shot. He turned to face the others. But maybe she just can't. There's only so much you can ask a person to do. She wouldn't be the first filly anybody lost a fortune on. So what if she happens to be the last? His tone did not match his words, and neither did his eyes, which said with desperate sincerity, "You can do this. You have to." Luce weighed the dagger in her hand. She'd seen its blade slice the life out of Penn. She'd felt it sting her flesh when Sophia tried to murder her in the chapel at Sword and Cross. The only reason Luce wasn't dead now was that Daniel had crashed through the roseate window to save her. The only reason she bore no scar was Gabby's healing touch. They'd saved her life for this moment, so that she could take another's. Dee perceived how far away fear had carried Luce. She motioned for Cam to sit down. "Perhaps it would be better, dear, if you didn't think of this as taking my life. You would be giving me the greatest gift, Lucinda. Can't you see that I'm ready to move on?" She pressed her lips together in a smile. "I know it's hard to understand, but there comes a time in a mortal body's journey when it seeks to die in the most advantageous way it can. They used to call it a good death. It is time for me to go, and if you give me the gift of this very good death, I promise you won't regret it." With tears stinging her eyes, Luce looked past Dee.
"Dan!" "I can't help you, Luce."
Daniel spoke before she'd even finished saying his name.
"You must do this alone."
Roland rose from his seat and examined the map. He looked east at the moon.
"If it were done when it is done, then it would be well it were done quickly."
"There isn't much time," Dee interpreted, resting a frail hand on Luce's shoulder. Luce's hands were shaking, sweating on the heavy silver hilt of the dagger, making it difficult to hold. Behind Dee, she could see the slab with its half-drawn map, and beyond the map, the Kayom Malak, in which the glass halo was secured. The silver pennon sat at Dee's feet. Luce had been through a sacrifice before, in Chichen Itza, when she'd cleaved to her past self, Ishkuat. The ritual made no sense to Luce. Why did something dear have to die so other dear things could live? Didn't whoever make these rules think they deserved an explanation? It was like Abraham's being asked to sacrifice Isaac. Had God created love to make pain feel even worse? "Will you do this for me?" Dee asked. "Break the curse. Will you do it for yourself?" Luce held the knife between her open palms. "What do I do?" "I'll guide you through it." Dee's left hand closed around Luce's right, which closed around the dagger. The hilt was slick with the sweat on her palms. With her right hand free, Dee unbound her cloak and slipped it off, standing before Luce in a long white tunic. Her upper chest was bare, revealing her arrowhead tattoo. Luce whimpered at the sight of it. "Please don't worry, dear. I'm a special breed, and this moment has always been my destiny. One quick thrust of the blade into my heart should release me." It was what Luce needed to hear. The dagger trembled as Dee guided it toward the tattoo on her chest. The old woman could steady Luce only so much, though. Luce knew that soon she would have to hold the blade alone. "You were doing fine." "Wait!" Luce cried as the blade pricked Dee's flesh. A red dot of blood bloomed on her skin, just above the hem of the tunic. "What will happen to you when you die?" Dee smiled so peacefully that Luce had no doubt it was for her benefit. "Why, dear, I shall slip into the masterpiece." "You'll go to heaven, won't you?" "Lucinda, let's not talk of..." "Please, I can't send you out of this life unless I know what your next one will look like. Will I see you again? Do you just go away like an angel?" "Oh, no. My death will be a secret life, like sleep," Dee said. "Better than sleep, actually, because for once I shall be able to dream." In life, transeternals never dream. I shall dream of Dr. Otto. It's been so long since I have seen my love, Lucinda. Surely you can understand. Luce wanted to weep. She understood. Of course she understood that much. Trembling ever harder, she drew the knife back over the tattoo on Dee's breast. The old woman gave her hands the softest squeeze. Bless you, child. Bless you abundantly. Hurry up now. Dee looked anxiously at the sky, blinking at the moon. In you go. Luce grunted as she plunged the knife into the old woman's chest. The blade ground through flesh and bone and muscle, and then it was inside her beautiful heart, up to the hilt. Luce's and Dee's faces were almost touching. The clouds their breaths made mingled in the air. Dee gritted her teeth and gripped Luce's hand as she gave the blade a sharp twist to the left. Her gold eyes widened, then froze in pain or shock. Luce wanted to look away, but couldn't. She searched for the scream inside her. Expel the blade, Dee whispered. Pour my blood into the silver pennon. Wincing, Luce yanked the dagger out. She felt something deep inside Dee rip apart. The wound was a yawning black cavern. Blood streamed to its surface. It was terrifying to see Dee's gold eyes go cloudy. The lady fell in a heap on the moonlit plateau. In the distance, the shriek of a scale rang out. All the angels looked above. Luce, we need you to move quickly, Daniel said, his forced calmness sparking more alarm in her than open panic would. Luce still held the dagger in her hands. It was slick and red and dripping with trans-eternal blood. She tossed it to the ground. It landed with a tinny clank that made her furious because it sounded like a toy instead of the mighty weapon that had killed two souls Luce loved. She wiped her bloody hands on her cloak. She gasped for air. She would have fallen to her knees if Daniel hadn't caught her. I'm sorry, Luce. He kissed her, his eyes beaming their old tenderness. For what?
That I couldn't help you do it.
Why couldn't you?
You did what none of us could do. You did it on your own.
Taking her by the shoulders, Daniel turned Luce toward the sight she did not want to see.
No, please don't make me...
Look, Daniel said.
Dee was sitting up, cradling the silver pennon in her arms so that its rim pressed against her breast. Blood poured from her heart freely, surging with each powerful beat, as if it were not blood, but something magical and strange from another world. Luce supposed it was. Dee's eyes were closed, but she was beaming, her face lifted, lit up by the moon. She didn't look like she'd ever been in any pain. When the goblet was filled, Luce stepped forward, bending down to take it, and place it back on the yellow arrow on the slab. When she wrested the silver pennon from Dee, the old woman tried to stand. Her bloody hands pressed into the ground to prop her up. Her knees trembled as she struggled to one foot, then the other. She slouched forward, her body convulsing slightly as she took the black cloak in her hands. She was trying to drape it back over her shoulders, Luce realized, so that her wound would be covered. Arion stepped forward to help her, but it didn't matter. Fresh blood flooded through the cloak. Dee's gold eyes were paler, her skin almost translucent. Everything about her seemed muted and soft, as if she were already someplace else. A new sob rose in Luce's chest as Dee took a halting step toward her.
Dee!
Luce closed the gap between them, holding out her arms to catch the dying woman. Her body felt like a shard of what she'd been before Luce had taken the dagger in her hands.
Shh, Dee cooed. I only wanted to thank you, dear. and to give you the small parting gift.
She reached inside her cloak. When she withdrew her hand, her thumb was dark with blood.
The gift of self-knowledge. You must remember how to dream what you already know. Now it's time for me to sleep, and for you to wake up.
Dee's eyes swept over Luce's face, and it seemed like she could see everything there was to see about her, all her past and all her future. Finally, she daubed the center of Luce's forehead with her bloody thumb.
Enjoy it, dear.
Then she hit the ground.
Dee!
Luce lunged for her, but the old woman was dead.
No!
Behind Luce, Daniel clasped her shoulders with his hands, giving her all the strength he could. It wasn't enough. It couldn't bring Dee back or change the fact that Luce had killed her. Nothing could. Tears blurred Luce's eyes. Wind swept in from the west and whistled off the curving cliffs, bringing with it another shriek of scale. It felt like every inch of the world was in chaos and nothing would ever settle down. She reached up and touched the bloody thumbprint on her forehead. White light blazed around her, her insides seared with heat. She staggered, holding her arms out in front of her and swaying as her body filled with light.
Luce?
Daniel's voice sounded far away. Was she dying? She felt suddenly galvanized, as if the thumbprint on her forehead were an ignition switch, and Dee had launched her soul.
Is this another time quake? She asked.
Though the sky was not gray, but a brilliant white. So bright, she couldn't see Daniel or any of the other angels around her on the slab.
No,
Roland's voice.
It's her. It's you, Luce.
Daniel's voice trembled. Her feet skimmed the stone as her body rose in a splendor of weightlessness. For a moment, the world hummed with incandescent harmony. Now, it's time for you to wake up. The air before Luce seemed to sputter, turning from white to blurry gray. Then, deep in the distance, came the vision of Bill's cackling face. His black wings spread wider than the sky, wider than 1,000 galaxies, filling her mind, filling every crevice in the universe, engulfing Luce with infinite fury.
This time I will win!
His voice like shards of glass dragging across bare skin. How close was he now? Luce's feet slammed into the mesa floor. The light was gone. She fell to her knees, landing next to Dee, who had come to rest on her side, one arm slung out to cradle her head, her long red hair spilling out like blood. Her eyes were closed, her face serene, so unlike the face that had been haunting Luce for the past week. She tried to stand, but she felt clumsy. Daniel dropped to his knees at her side. Sitting next to her on the slab, he took her in his arms. The smell of his hair and the touch of his hands soothed her. He whispered,
I'm here, Luce. It's okay.
She didn't want to tell him she kept seeing Bill. She wanted to go back to that light. She touched the thumbprint on her forehead, and nothing happened. Dee's blood was dry. Daniel was staring at her, lips tight. He brushed the hair out of her eyes and pressed his palm to her forehead.
You're burning up.
I'm fine.
She did feel feverish, but there was no time to worry about that. She staggered to her feet and looked up at the moon. It was directly overhead in the center of the sky. This was the moment Dee had told them to wait for, the moment her death would become worthwhile.
Luce! Daniel!
Roland's voice.
You'd better look at this.
He held the goblet at an angle and was tipping the last of Dee's blood into the depression at the base of the map.
When Luce and Daniel filed in next to the others, the blood had already flowed into most of the marble's broken lines. Though Dee had said that the earth was different back at the time of the angel's fall, the map before them looked increasingly similar to a contemporary map of the earth. South America was nearer to bumping against Africa. The northeast corner of North America nudged more closely to Europe, but mostly it was the same. There was the slip of water where the Gulf of Suez parted mainland Egypt from the Sinai Peninsula, and in the middle of the peninsula was the yellow stone marking the plateau where they were right now. To the north was the Mediterranean, dimpled with 1,000 tiny islands, and on the other side of its narrow belt, at the point where Asia reached for Europe, was a shallow pool of blood, sharpening slowly into a star. Luce heard Daniel swallow at her side. The angels all looked stupefied as Dee's blood filled out the points of the star, indicating modern Turkey, more specifically...
Troy,
Daniel said finally, shaking his head in amazement.
Who would have guessed?
There again, Roland said,
his tone conveying a tortured history with the city.
I always got the sense that place was doomed.
Arian shivered.
But I never knew why, Annabel finished.
Cam,
Daniel said, and the others looked away from the map to eye the demon.
I'll go, Cam said quickly. I'm fine.
Then that's it, Daniel said,
as if he couldn't believe it.
Philip,
he called, looking upward. Phil and his three outcasts rose from their perches on the cliff peaks overhead.
Alert the others.
What others? Who else was left by now, Luce thought.
What will I tell them? Phil asked. Tell them we know the site of the fall, that we are leaving now for Troy.
No!
Luce's voice halted the outcast's movement.
We can't leave yet. What about Dee?
In the end, it was no surprise that Dee had taken care of everything, down to the details for her memorial. Annabel found them tucked into a slat on the roof of the creaky wooden trunk, which, as Dee's letter explained, flipped over to form a catafalque. The sun was low in the sky by the time they began to make her memorial. It was the end of the seventh day. Dee's letter assured them this wouldn't be a waste of their time. Roland, Cam, and Daniel carried the catafalque to the center of the marble platform. They covered the map completely, so that when the scale descended there, they would see a funeral, not the site of the angel's fall. Annabel and Arian carried Dee's body behind the catafalque. They laid her carefully on its center, so that her heart was directly above the star of her blood. Luce remembered that Dee had said that sanctuaries were built on top of sanctuaries. Her body would form a sanctuary for the map it hid. Cam draped Dee's cloak over her body, but he left her face exposed to the sky. In her final resting place, Dee, their desideratum, looked small but mighty. She looked at peace. Luce wanted to believe Dee was wandering through dreams with Dr. Otto.
She wants Luce to be the one to bless her,
Annabel read from the letter. Daniel squeezed her hand, as if to say, Are you okay? Luce had never done anything like this before. She waited to feel awkward, guilty for speaking at the funeral for someone she had slain, but in those emotions' place sat a sense of honor and awe. She stepped up to the catafalque. She gave herself a few moments to gather her thoughts.
Dee was our desideratum, she began. But she was more than one desired thing.
She took a breath and realized she wasn't blessing just Dee, but also Gabby and Molly, whose bodies were air, and Penn, whose funeral she hadn't been able to attend. It was all too much. Her vision swirled, and the words vanished, and all she knew was that Dee had smeared sacrificial blood on Luce's forehead. It was Dee's gift to Luce. You must remember how to dream, what you already know.
Blood thrummed at her temples. Her head and her heart were ablaze with heat, her hands icy as she wove them through Dee's.
Something's happening.
Luce held her face in her hands, her hair spilling down around her. She closed her eyes and found bright white light on the backs of her eyelids.
Luce!
When she opened her eyes, the angels had flung off their cloaks and unfurled their wings. The mesa was flooded with light. A great mass of scale shrieked somewhere just above her.
What's happening?
She shielded her eyes.
We need to hurry, Daniel,
Roland shouted from above. Had the other angels already taken off? What was the source of the light? Daniel's arms wrapped around her waist. He held her tightly. It felt good, but she was still afraid.
I'm here with you, Lucinda. I love you, no matter what.
She knew that her feet were drifting from the ground, that her body was taking flight. She knew she was with Daniel. But she was barely aware of their transit through the burning sky, barely aware of anything beyond the strange new pulsing in her soul. 16. Apocalypse. Somewhere along the way, it started raining. Raindrops pattered on Daniel's wings. Thunder rolled in the sky before them. Lightning ripped through the night. Luce had been sleeping, or in a heavy state of something similar to sleep, because when the storm came, she stirred to a dreamy half-awareness. The headwind was brutal and incessant, flattening Luce against Daniel's body. The angels flew through it at a tremendous speed, every wingbeat thrusting them across whole cities, mountain ranges. They flew over clouds that looked like giant icebergs, passing them in the blink of an eye. Luce didn't know where they were or how long they'd been traveling. She didn't feel like asking. It was dark again. How much time remained? She couldn't remember. Counting seemed impossible, though Luce had once loved to solve complex calculus proofs. She almost laughed at the thought of sitting at a wooden desk in calculus, chewing on an eraser next to 20 mortal kids. Had that ever really happened to her? The temperature dropped. The rain intensified as the angels flew into a gale that stretched farther than her eye could see. Now the raindrops pelting Daniel's wings sounded like hail hitting icy snow. The weather came sideways and upward. Luce's clothes were drenched. She felt hot one moment, frozen the next. Daniel's hands, encircling her body, rubbed goosebumps from her arms. She watched water streaming off the toes of her black boots toward the ground, thousands of feet below. Visions appeared in the darkness through the storm. She saw Dee letting down red hair that swirled around her body. The old lady was whispering, "Break the curse." Her hair became bloody tendrils, enclosing her like mummy wrap, then like a caterpillar's cocoon, until the body became a massive column of thick and dripping blood. Through the mist, a golden light grew brighter. Cam's wings sharpened in the space between Luce's feet and the speck of land she had been watching.
"Is this it?"
Cam shouted through the wind.
"I don't know,"
Daniel said.
"How will we know?" "We just will." "Daniel, the time..." "Don't rush me. We have to get her to the right place." "Is she asleep?" "She's feverish. I don't know. Shh."
A grunt of frustration accompanied the fading of Cam's glow back into the mist. Luce's eyelids flickered. Was she asleep? The sky did seem to be raining nightmares. Now she saw Miss Sophia, her black eyes gleaming in the light reflected from the raindrops. She raised her dagger, and her pearl bracelets rattled as she brought the knife into Luce's heart. Her words,
"Trust is a careless pursuit," echoed again and again in Luce's mind, until she wanted to scream. Then the vision of Miss Sophia flickered and swirled, darkening into the gargoyle who Luce had trusted so carelessly. Little Bill, who'd posed as a friend, all the while hiding something vast and terrifying. Maybe that was what friendship was to the devil. Love, always tinged with evil. The gargoyle's body was a husk for forces darkly powerful. In her vision, Bill bared rotten black fangs and exhaled clouds of rust. He roared, but silently, a silence that was worse than anything he ever could have said, because her imagination filled the void. He consumed her plane of vision as Lucifer, as evil, as the end. She snapped open her eyes. She clasped her hands over Daniel's arms around her as they flew through the endless storm. "You're not afraid," she vowed silently in the rain. It was the hardest of the things she'd had to convince herself of on this journey. "When you face him again, you will not be afraid." "Guys," Arion said, appearing on the right side of Daniel's wings. "Look." The clouds thinned as they drove onward. Below them was a valley, a broad stretch of rocky farmland that met a narrow strait of sea on its west side. A huge wooden horse stood absurdly in the barren landscape, a monument to a shadowed past. Luce could make out stony ruins near the horse, a Roman theater, a contemporary parking lot. The angels flew on. The valley spread out below, dark but for a single light in the distance, an electric lamp that shone through the window of a tiny hut in the center of the slope.
"Fly toward the house," Daniel called to the others.
Luce had been watching a line of goats drift across the sodden fields, gathering in a grove of apricot trees. Her stomach lurched as Daniel swooped suddenly down. When they touched the ground, Luce and the angels were about a quarter of a mile from the white hut.
"Let's go inside." Daniel took her hand. "They'll be waiting for us."
Luce walked next to Daniel through the rain, her dark hair splayed across her face, her borrowed coat drenched with what felt like 1,000 pounds of raindrops. They were trudging up a winding, muddy path when a large drop of water clung to Luce's eyelashes and dripped inside her eye. When she rubbed it away and blinked, the earth had utterly changed. An image flashed before her eyes, a long-forgotten memory returning to life. The wet ground beneath her feet had gone from green to singed black in one place, ashen gray in another. The valley surrounding them was pocked with deep, smoking craters. Luce smelled carnage, roasted flesh and rot, so thick and sharp it burned her nostrils and clung to the roof of her mouth. Craters sizzled, sounding like rattlesnakes as she walked past. Dust, angel dust, was everywhere. It floated through the air, coated the ground and rocks, fell like snowflakes on her face. Something silver was in her peripheral vision. It looked like broken pieces of a mirror, except that it was phosphorescent, shimmering, almost alive. Luce dropped Daniel's hand, fell to her knees, and crawled along the muddy ground toward the broken silver glass. She didn't know why she did this. She only knew she had to touch it. She reached for a large piece, groaning with the effort. She had her hand firmly around it. And then she blinked and came up with nothing but a fistful of soft mud. She looked up at Daniel, her eyes filled with tears.
"What's happening?"
He glanced at Arion.
"Get Luce inside."
She felt herself being lifted by the arms.
"You'll be okay, kiddo," Arion said. "Promise."
The dark wood door of the hut opened, and a warm light poured out from within. Peering out at the wet angels was the calm, collected face of Stephen Fillmore, Lucy's favorite teacher from Shoreline.
Glad you could make it, Daniel said.
Same to you.
Stephen's voice was steady and professorial, just as Luce remembered. Somehow it was reassuring.
Is she all right? Stephen asked.
No, she was losing it,